Greetings and welcome to The Missions Show, where we explore your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement, accompanied by my good friend and compatriot, Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, on another thrilling expedition into the deep forests of missiological endeavor. And we are excited for it. We hope you are as well, joined by some friends serving with ABWE, and we're excited to introduce them to you in a moment. Of course, The Missions Show is a ministry of ABWE, Association of Baptists for World Evangelism. If you want to take your next steps in the Great Commission, go to abwe.org. And before we dive in today, if this show is a blessing to you, if you have the ability to, go ahead and hit share in your podcast app, or if you're watching on YouTube or elsewhere, share this with a friend in your podcast app, especially those of you listeners, leave a positive rating and review, because we would love for other people to discover this content. And who knows, maybe someone will feel compelled to join the ministry that we're hearing about here today. Scott, we've had the privilege actually. I think the last time we were all together with one of our two guests today was when we were at a missions conference in Jacksonville a year or two ago. And we got to spend some time together recruiting some fresh, new, young missionary blood into our organization. Mm-hmm. And so excited for that, but even more excited for this conversation. Obviously, seeing both of these guys together is important. Scott, would you be so kind as to introduce our guest for today?
Well, today we're going to go by some pseudonyms for reasons that I think become clear in a little bit. But we have Will and Beth McAuliffe. That is not their real names, but they have been serving in the Middle East for many years and now are based in Europe, where they're doing a lot of things in leading that Middle Eastern region. And so, first of all, can you just, share with us how the Lord stirred your family toward missions, and especially some of the unique challenges that your family has faced dealing with some health issues that have kind of impacted the way you think about foreign missions.
Well, thank you for having us. And it's a pleasure to be with you guys again. And it's as we talk about our journey towards missions, it starts for both of us when we were young children, 9 years old. And it was a dream that we both had. And we worked through that. It took almost 20 years for us to get to the field the first time. And so we had surrendered. We were ready to go. And we said when it was time to go and God showed us where he would have us, we would jump on it. And we waited and prepared as best we could. We did our training. We studied theology. We got practice in the local church. We did all of those things. And God burdened our heart for the Middle East, for Arabic speaking people. And we say, we've given our lives to make disciples among Arabic-speaking people. And we moved in 2012 into the Middle East to serve there and had a time of learning Arabic, of really learning culture, learning church, serving alongside churches in the Middle East. And God opened doors for us to minister there with refugees. The ISIS had invaded Syria, taking over Syria and northern Iraq. And so we had Iraqis and Syrians and Yemeni and Egyptians and all sorts of people that God brought to our doorstep to minister to. And he taught us a lot of cross-cultural ministry and things there. And he opened the opportunity to equip people in the Arabic language there and to serve. And so we were doing that for a number of years. And we really thought that we had found a place that God would allow us to serve the rest of our lives. We were really kind of positioning ourselves in a place, in a neighborhood, in a region to really start seeing a church planted in that area, concentrated group of people to work with as a team to evangelize that area. And we found out that we were expecting a child at that point. And that was 2019, and had to come off the field at that point. And just because of the complications of that pregnancy, it was, I think, there was one appointment in the whole time that we had a good appointment. And so it was a difficult time there, and we had to come off the field in about a week. At first, we were told we could not travel. that Beth was not able, she was not fit to get on a plane and to fly. And so we had to wait. And then when she was allowed to travel again, we came back to the States, and 2 weeks later, our daughter was born at 25 weeks and 1 day. Mm-hmm. And so that led to multiple complications. Our daughter's lungs were not fully developed. She was into the hospital instantly intubated, working on some of those things. And she spent the next 9 months in the hospital fighting just for her life with her lungs. And a lot of trauma of premature birth is not known until later. We found out that she had brain bleeds in those early days, and it caused cerebral palsy. Our daughter has bronchopulmonary dysplasia, so small lungs, and she has cerebral palsy, which is a factor of her being able to move and function with her limbs. And then she had seizures the first 2 years of her life that led to not having the ability. She's nonverbal, unable to speak, and those sort of things. So she has a number of special needs. And at the time, we didn't know if God would have us back on the field. It's one of those things you come away. I remember not only the idea of having a daughter in the hospital, but also having to go back and disassemble our life on the field, to take away everything that we felt God was doing, this place that we called home, and undoing all those things and laying the call of God on the altar and saying, God, are you still doing a work in our lives? Are you still doing something? This is, we're now, some people say, in some ways broken. This is, we're an incomplete family. We're no longer the perfect missionary family, so to speak, where everybody's complete and strong and healthy. Have you changed the plan and the call in our lives for this? And God did a work at that point.
I feel we've talked about it, how we feel like we laid it on the altar, and God got over time as we prayed, God gave that dream back to us. And he confirmed in our lives, no, this, what I put in your heart as a 9-year-old is what I still have for you. And so it was exciting for us, but at the same time, we're like, what do? We can't go back to the Middle East. The medical system, the air quality, there's several factors there that just, we wouldn't be able to take our daughter back. And so it was a gift to have that given back. But at the same point, there were a lot of questions going, okay, what does the next step look like?
Well, I do want to just press in on this a little bit. Beth, what did that feel like for you, especially as a mother, having, yes, this missionary calling and this desire, but then delivering a child with all of these complications and watching your little one struggle and suffer? And I can't imagine the sleepless nights and the prayer, the fasting, all sorts of things that must have dominated your time. What was that season like for you before realizing that the Lord had led you back to serve overseas in some way?
So it was, when we were overseas in the Middle East, we had been given very little hope that our daughter would even survive. Because of the complications, I think we read, of course, you hear a little bit from the doctor in, you know, broken English, and you go home and research. And then, we read 1% chance of survival. And so I think for me in those early days, the fact that she was alive, that God had given her to us, was just a miracle. And I remember, us walking around the Ronald McDonald House parking lot and just talking about the future. And it's hard to put into words, where you're so grateful for this miracle and this child God's given you. And yet you see this dream of your lifetime kind of crumbling away. And so I really think God just gave us grace for it. I really can't tell you what I was feeling. I just know God carried us through that whole time. And gave us his grace as we took the next step.
If I can just follow up too, and I hope this is appropriate question to ask, but I can imagine there may be missionaries or former missionaries that are listening to this and have had to make a different choice where they were not able to go back to the field. Sometimes organizations say you can't take your child back. Sometimes the nations you want to go to may prevent that. Or maybe just a family decided, hey, we this is God's change of plan. How did you walk through whether God was calling you back to the field with your child? And how would you maybe counsel others to think about that?
You know, it was something that we had to work to and talk together about, pray through together. We had to come to the place to say, we believe that this calling and this call for missions is for us, and it is for us and our family when God enables us to do that. And as we prayed about it and we came to that conclusion, we then brought it to our church and we asked the church leadership to pray with us and asked them to confirm that in our lives. And so as we walk together, not just with us, but then with them looking in and showing and actually taking a step of faith, because at the time that we're praying about this, Joy's on a ventilator. She's dependent on a machine to keep her breathing. And she's, you know, all sorts of things are going on there. And we're walking this path, and that the church came alongside of us and said, they said, we by faith believe that that is where you are supposed to be. And then we reached out again and said to ABWE and said, hey, you know, this is not a clean issue. This is where we are at. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. where our family is at medically. Is this something that you guys would step in alongside of us and come alongside of our home church and be an organization that would facilitate getting us to the field? And it was a gracious thing to they walked alongside and said, yes, we would love to do that and walk with you.
I think one thing, just to chime in on that, when we were first back in the States with everything going on with our daughter, I think the Lord really, we had to come to the point to say, my identity is not in being a missionary. Mm-hmm. And my identity is not in the ministry we have. I am a child of God. And whether I never, ever go back, whether I'm ever in full-time service again, I can serve as a child of God and I'm complete. I'm not missing out. As much as we wanted to go back, that's not my identity. And that's not what gives me value. And so I feel like that when we kind of work through that issue to go, God, whatever you have for us and whatever this looks like, we're okay with that. And that was very freeing to say, whether I go back or not, doesn't mean I'm a failure or I'm a success. I'm a follower of God and he gets the glory.
I think that's a big deal. I think that's really important because I think a lot of missionaries that are struggling with coming off the field struggle with that. They feel like they let down their supporters. They feel like they let down their church. They feel like maybe even, you know, the things they said about their calling are now invalidated. And so really rooting yourself in Christ first and foremost. I'm really glad you emphasized that. Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear both of you emphasize that and want to hear more not only about your family, but also about your current ministry and how the Lord led you not to the Middle East, but to Europe. We'll get into that in just a moment. But first, a quick word from ABWE. Here at ABWE, we believe that the Great Commission is given not to nonprofit agencies, not to governments, not just to individuals, but to the local church. The local church is God's plan A for world missions. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time your church had not just a missions-themed service, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, asking, Lord, who is it from among our midst that you would have us to send out? Well, that's why our team here has built a wonderful collection of resources called Send Sunday. You can have not just another Mission Sunday, but an intentional time of seeking the Lord, waiting upon him, and seeking his direction for who he might send out from your church. There's prayer guides, there's bulletin inserts, there's sermon study guides, and more, all at abwe.org/sendsunday. Join the hundreds of other churches asking the Lord, who would you send out from our midst? Join us for Send Sunday. We're back. Will, I want to ask you, how did all of this, this situation with praying about serving overseas in some way, we know what you're doing in Europe, but for others that might not understand, okay, well, how does all of this lead them to Germany? Explain that part of the process for us.
We had the opportunity to work with refugees and we were part of seeing Syrians moving around the world into Turkey, Lebanon, into Jordan, different places. And we knew as we were in the States that there was could be up to 1 million refugees from Syria moving into Europe, and most of them were settling and aiming to get to Germany. And the highest concentration in Germany of refugees is in the Berlin area. And so as we were thinking and praying about it, we said, where could we go that our daughter could be taken care of, and where are there Arabs? And that led us to Berlin, Germany. And so when we called, it's an amazing thing. We spoke with ABWE, and the teams that are here in Europe and this area had been praying for a ministry to begin with Syrian refugees. And we called and said, hey, can we work with Syrian refugees? And God put a thing together that both of our prayers really were answered in coming together in this, and just kind of aiming at a place that had been kind and opened their doors. And in some ways now, all these years later, they have a lot of people, and it's a bit overwhelming here to be on the front and having so many people that are in need of things. And so God has opened the door for us to minister here in Berlin and to see pockets of people. We're looking at three different areas of the city that are just right together. And I think the numbers are somewhere around 40,000 Arabic speaking people in these areas, just living close here. There's a street just close to us, a couple blocks away that, man, it looks like we could be in Damascus or in Cairo. Everything's done in Arabic. You speak, they ask if it's Arabic first or German. When you walk in the door of the shops there, you can function and see those things in the street there. It's an amazing place to be in. And the need is great just because of that.
Tell us a little bit about the state of affairs there. I'm thinking of several questions. First, I mean, if people aren't familiar with some of these migration patterns away from places like Syria into Europe, obviously Europe is in some ways being Islamized, whatever the correct term would be. And that's certainly a challenging and somewhat alarming task for maybe some of us, but also there are certainly opportunities to reach them with the gospel. But then what is the church doing? Does the church view it with suspicion? Does the church view it as an evangelistic opportunity? Does the church view it as both? Is there much of an evangelical church in a place like Germany at all to address it? Or do you find that most of the people there are either completely secular, or if they belong to some kind of formal institutional, you know, Lutheran kind of heritage, that it's not necessarily something that's actually affecting them on a daily basis. They're not truly walking with the Lord. And then where do you fit into all of that as an American coming alongside and saying, yeah, I want to come to your country, but to focus on these people? What are some of those, I have to imagine, tense dynamics like?
When you think and you pray and you dream about what things look like, you kind of say, man, I would hope there's a church there that we could come into and see, and they're strong believers, and the work has been done ahead of us, and there are people who are there, and we can walk alongside of them and see maybe an Arabic-speaking congregation built up in parallel with a German-speaking congregation, or we could see some of those things. And I think the sad thing for us is we've walked into a country that their state churches and people pay they give through their taxes, and they give to the Catholic Church or the state evangelical church, and it has no meaning. There's very few true believers in the city. And the overwhelming air in the city is that towards secular humanism. And so even people who've come in that are evangelical, those things pull them towards that identity of the city. It's drawing people down into this thing where things are watered down. There's acceptance of the worship of self in the city. And it's just a difficult place, because you end up with very few, I would call, strong churches in Berlin. And there's an amazing need for German speaking churches. There's an amazing need for international churches. And it's a bit, Berlin is so transient. Berlin has so many people moving in and out of it every day. And the general attitude of Germans is there is a they have compassion fatigue in some ways, where they were compassionate for a while. There's this weight of people who don't speak German. Their culture is going away. They feel like they're losing their heritage. And then they kind of disdain that. The government, as it has changed in the last year, has basically said, hey, Syria, you have a, you know, you're, the government in Syria has changed now, and you can go back home, even though Syria is a mess. There's nothing there to go to. Germany has basically said, we're done with you. We don't really want you anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the overarching attitude of people, and the culture of the churches are not equipped to handle them or minister to them.
Compassion fatigue. That's a good term. I think a lot of people resonate with that. It's one thing to accept refugees. It's another thing to lose your culture, especially if that culture is a legacy culture that maybe at one point was a part of Christendom. Lot to wrestle with there missiologically. I think my biggest question, Will, is, are you seeing Arabs or Arabic background people, Syrians, come to faith in Christ? Is that happening? Is there an openness at all, or is there a sense of, no, we're Muslim and we're here to stay and we're here to spread that? My second question is, are Germans coming to saving knowledge of Christ, or are they not quite? I think of the prodigal son, right? The pig slop of secular humanism. Are they done with the pig slop yet? Are they ready to come back to a recognition of Christ, or are they still? Are you still seeing that it's relatively hard for a modern German individual to really understand the gospel the way we've come to understand it?
Yeah, I spent yesterday with a German tutor as I'm trying to learn German. And we were talking about the idea of ministering to a German person who grew up here in the city. They're reading the gospel together. They're reading the Bible together, trying to come to these things. And just the idea that they're idolaters still. They have not come to that place where they're into themselves. They're worshiping themselves, and they're not listening to the gospel because they found that by living in this secular humanism, they find everything they need. They build themselves up. They see all those things, and it's still not coming to those things. It's a difficult place to minister the gospel there. And so that's German. The Arabs are in a place where this city is affronting some of their moral values. And so sometimes we find that they are doubling down on their traditionalism, and they're trying to do these things because they're watching their children go to a German school and be taught, and that air is coming into their children, and their children are not following their traditions, and so it causes strife in the house. It's kind of losing control in some of those things. And so the other thing that was promised here was some measure of compassion. This was the promised land, the dream land to be as a refugee. And there's those things maybe happened the first 2 years or 3 years, and everybody who came later is struggling, and there's no compassion for people. And so one of the things we found as we approach people, as God gives us opportunity to show compassion and to show some understanding of culture and to speak, that people respond well to that they're seen even as a refugee, that they feel invisible here, that as they're seen, they respond well. And it opens the door to conversations and getting down that road. Now, those are difficult. They're hard to do because now you have a warm culture of Arab culture, and this cold culture kind of where people keep to themselves in Berlin and don't talk to one another. It's kind of an interesting mix, and we're still learning. You know, we're quite new here, and we're still trying to learn how to navigate those things. But there's an open door to see the gospel preached among Arabic speaking people. We've run across believers here, and sadly, they are disconnected. They haven't been integrated into a body. There's not a place where they're comfortably in, and it breaks my heart. They're spread around a city, and it's huge. It takes hours to get across. And the need is huge to go, we can start a church here, but we need one we need one over there and in this section of town too. So it's a huge thing.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I'm just wondering, are there any stories that you can share with us briefly that just have encouraged you and that might encourage our listeners?
I'll try to be quick. I met a lady in our Turkish market where we buy our meat, and I heard her trying to order in German. She kept kind of slipping back into Arabic. And so I greeted her, and we started chatting. It's loud, it's animated. You can't speak Arabic quietly. And before I left, she said, you know, will you come for coffee? And so I, you know, eagerly agreed. We exchanged numbers. I went to the place she was living. It wasn't even an apartment. It was an old restaurant that she somehow, you know, they were renting. And we sat in there and we talked. We heard their story. Of course, it's, you know, a traumatic story of war, of losing a child. Their son crossed the water into Southern Europe. Eventually, you know, had his parents come, but they had to leave two daughters behind. But over and over again, she kept saying to me, I wish I had met you sooner. And actually the next day, her husband, who had been out of town, came and got her and the daughter, and they moved to another city, hoping to be able to, you know, make a better life for themselves. But it just taught me that there are hungry women and families, but for me, women all over the city. They just need someone to love them and to speak truth into their life. They're hopeless. Their family is the thing that, you know, they would cherish the most. They have children spread all over the world. And I think there's just a wide open door that we would love to see these relationships that would foster gospel conversations.
I love that. In the midst of this great clash of civilizations, there's people and ordinary people and suffering people that want to be seen and spoken to. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that can open a door for the love of Christ. What a beautiful note. And we would encourage you, if you're stirred, reach out, perhaps even pray about how you can serve alongside a team like this. And Will also oversees all of our work as ABWE throughout the Middle East and North Africa. So reach out to us. Email alex@missionsshow.com. We can get you in touch. We'll work through the security implications of that. But if you're interested in serving, reach out to alex@missionsshow.com and learn more about this ministry and other ministries all throughout ABWE's work in the world at abwe.org, and get more content from this show at missionsshow.com, including our bonus episode. Will, something we didn't get into is we know that you are passionate about church planting, and yet we know that everything that you saw in the Middle East along those lines, well, not all that glitters is gold. And so we'll get into that and more in our bonus segment for our premium subscribers. Go ahead and get access to that at missionsshow.com/premium. And until our next episode, go and make disciples of all the nations.